This dagger, Davy, what kind of injury could this inflict? The blade is obtunded and the end is rounded.
Let me see. Well, this is just a property dagger. It's not only blunted, the blade retracts into the handle.
Well, how's that?
Well, it appears to go into the victim body. Here, see for yourself.
Ah, how very ingenious. So, if I stab the table... Oh.
Good God. It isn't working. Give it to me. Look, Samuel, the blade's immovable. It's rusted up.
So, if a man struck with sufficient force, it would transfix the victim.
It would indeed.
A dangerous property,
Dave. Dangerous, all right. We've nearly had accidents before. Rapid is supposed to inspect all the daggers each night to ensure that they work.
And what if they don't?
Why, he throws them away.
He didn't throw this one away.
So, Rapid gets drunk, picks up a faulty dagger, and stabs Warburton to death. What a terrible mischance.
What did I tell you? Macbeth's a confoundedly unlucky play.
A disputable hypothesis, sir.
How can you say that? Doesn't this prove it?
Well, you surely don't suggest, sir, that this was anything but an accident.
I suggest nothing, sir, but certain facts mystify me. Where were you, Davy, when this accident occurred?
Been here, doing the accounts.
So you didn't witness the stabbing?
No. Forbes fetched me after the curtain fell.
But the entire audience saw it happen. Bozzy, how many times was Warburton stabbed?
Once.
And where was he stabbed?
In the chest.
In the chest, Davy. Once.
What of it, Johnson?
Where was Banquo stabbed, and how often?
I see. In the head. The head!
Aye, my good lord. Safe in the ditch he bides with 20 trenchant gashes on his head.
In fact, I directed Rafferty to strike first between the shoulder blades, and then, when Warburton fell, the murderers closed around him and made to stab his head.
But Rafferty was drunk, so he stabbed him in the chest.
Rafferty was so drunk, sir, that he was unconscious. 3 minutes later, how could he have struck a fatal blow?
But we saw him do it.
Saw whom?
Why, Rafferty, to be sure. Oh, come, Johnson, we saw him quite plainly.
No, sir, we did not. We saw a figure hooded and cloaked like the other two.
But the dagger, the blood on his cloak and face, it must have been Rafferty.
Oh, indeed. And it must have been the groom, sir, who killed Duncan in the play. Hey, Davy.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I'll gild the faces of the grooms with all, for it must seem their guilt.
Yeah.
I shall go and talk to Forbes and Mrs. Siddons. I have some questions to ask.
Yes, do so. Meanwhile, Bozzy, you and I'll take a stroll on the stage and behind the scenes. Maybe our scrutiny will offer a hint to the mystery.
That observation with extensive view survey the stage. A chance to yield a clue.
Bozzy, you impudent scoundrel! Will you improve my own writing for me? You're nothing better than an iconoclast, sir. But how did you come to be in the wings, Mrs. Binion?
Oh, well, sir, I was here in the wardrobe room, minding my own business. Then there was this scream. Well, it was horrible, Dr. Johnson, horrible.
Yeah.
Turned my bones to a jelly. I ran out down the corridor, and there he was, in the middle of the stage, weltering in his gore. Oh, if you'll pardon the expression.
Who else was in the wings?
Oh, well, just Mrs. Siddons. Oh, and Mr. Blunt. He'd been with me in the wardrobe room. I was mending his costume. Ripped his cloak on a nail, he did. Just as he made his exit through the upstage arch. Shocking tear. Right through to his small clothes.
Oh, dear me.
He comes straight round to me at the end of Act One. I'll have something to say to Mr. Forbes about that archway.
You didn't perceive anyone else loitering in the wings?
No, sir. Oh, of course, there was Mr. Barry and Mrs. Dancer and the rest of them over the other side.
Yeah.
Only I couldn't see them clearly, what with my eyes and being upset by that scream.
It's been a great shock. Great shock to everyone, Mrs. Binion.
Terrible business, Mr. Boswell. But there you are, Macbeth again. Nothing but bad luck. And the work for wardrobe and properties you wouldn't believe. All them helmets, whiskers and red pigtails. Oh.
You have an onerous responsibility, madam. The theatre is indebted to you.
And so are we. And now we shall bid you good night. Mr. Boswell and I will retrace our labyrinthine way to the stage.
Oh, you can get out this way, sir.
Oh?
Well, if you don't mind stepping round the ampers. Through that door, straight through the property room, and there you are.
Your servant, madam. You have been most accommodating.
Oh, it's a pleasure, sir.
But, Forbes, why weren't you here in the prompt corner as usual?
I was underneath the stage, sir. The cord and trap's been sticking again. I've just gone down to inspect it.
So you were holding the book, Mrs. Siddons?
Yes, Mr. Garrick.
Did you see what happened on stage?
No, sir. I noticed that George Warburton missed his line. When I brought the curtain down, he didn't get up. He just lay there. There was blood. Real blood. I screamed.
Who else was in the wings?
Mr. and Mrs. Barry and the others in the banquet scene. They were on the far side.
Yes, yes, of course. But your side, prompt side.
There was no one else, sir.
You're sure of that?
Quite sure. When I screamed, Mr. Forbes hastened up the ladder. Then a minute or so later, I saw Binney and Mr. Blunt.
I see. Well, thank you, Mrs. Siddons.
Thank you.
Now then, Forbes. I want a statement from everyone in the company. Everyone. Where they were when Warburton was killed, who was with them, and so forth.
But it was an accident, sir.
How can you be so positive?
Well, I... Mr. Garrick, sir, you surely don't suggest it was a deliberate act.
Who's to say, Mr. Forbes, until we've questioned the entire company? Let me have your report by tomorrow afternoon.
As you wish, sir.
Oh, and I want to inspect that cauldron trap. Now. We've trouble enough on our hands. We don't want any more. Fetch your lantern, will you? Oh, there you are, Johnson. Fosdy.
David.
Have you ever been beneath the stage?
No, David.
There's a trap door getting trouble. Come and have a look at it.
Oh.
This way. You'll have to take care down the ladder. Now, young Johnson.
You see, Dr. Johnson, the actor stands on this platform here
yeah.
and is drawn upwards by means of a pulley and drum operated by a stagehand.
A long haul.
Oh, yes, Mr. Boswell, it's a good 15 feet.
But how does the actor pass through the stage floor?
The trap door is immediately above us.
Ah, yes.
It's hinged, you see, and kept in place by a bolt. When I pull a rope in the prompt corner, the bolt is withdrawn and the trap falls open by its own weight.
A weight that must be considerable. Doesn't the noise interrupt the performance?
We disguise it with a roll of thunder.
Simple mechanism, I perceive. Well, what then is the dilemma?
The trap doesn't always open when I draw the bolt. If you'll hold the ladder, Mr. Garrick, I'll take a closer look.
Well, up you go, Forbes. Use the lantern.
If the trap door fails to open when the bolt is withdrawn, there can be but one reason. There's been some expansion.
Do you say that the wood has swollen?
I mean, sir, that if the door is not infibulated by the bolt, then it must be compaginated by some tumefaction of the timbers.
Yes, I see.
I see what's happened, Mr. Garrick. The trap has come away from the lintel. One of the hinges is loose. Indeed, the wood's quite rotten.
You must set the carpenter to it tomorrow morning.
I'll instruct him to patch it up, sir.
Patch it?
Well, we need to put in a whole new beam.
Well, why can't he do that tomorrow?
We'll have to strike the scenery, sir. We can't do that before Sunday. We shall make it safe until then.
Now, do you promise that?
Oh, yes, sir.
Let's see, who uses this trap?
Oh, only second and third apparitions in Act 4. Mrs. Siddons and Mrs. Metcalf.
And what about the armed head? Hobson, isn't it?
Oh, he uses the OP trap, sir. That's quite safe.
Well, you must tell Mrs. Siddons and Mrs. Metcalf. You'd better warn the whole company.
Yes, very good, sir.
Confound all trap doors. They're always giving trouble.
Yeah, wasn't there an accident some years ago?
There was indeed. Charlie Beaumont in 64.
Charles Beaumont.
Trap gave way and he broke his neck. And there have been others.
A gruesome thought, sir. I'm becoming a prey to morbid imaginings. Come, Bossy. We leave Davy and Mr. Forbes to their deliberations.
Oh, don't forget, Davy. We dine with the Thrales tomorrow night. We shall take a carriage to Streatham. May we call for you here at 7 o'clock?
I'll oblige you.
Good night, you both.
Good night, Davy.
Good night.
And his brush is working like... Oh, certainly. Oh, yeah. Ah, here you are, Johnson.
Ah, oh, boy. party. Another pot, if you please.
Ah, thank you, my friend. I've just come from the theatre. The whole company's in a turmoil. Mrs. Binion had hysterics twice last night and thrice this morning. Blunt's inconsolable at the loss of his boon companion, and Rafferty's lodged in the roundhouse. He's to go before the magistrate on Monday to answer a charge of culpable homicide.
Has he made any admission of guilt?
Yeah, well, he admits to taking a drink in the property room. After that, he remembers nothing.
Culpable homicide, so it's believed to have been a mishap.
So say the watch, but there are all kinds of rumours running round the company. I believe your suspicions are justified.
Oh, I suspect nothing, sir, but I question everything.
You have reason, sir. Forbes told me in the strictest confidence he believes it was deliberate murder.
Murder? By whom?
You'll be astounded, sir. It was Barry.
Spragger Barry? Ah, I can't believe it.
He quarreled with Warburton in his dressing room on Wednesday. Barry accused Warburton of molesting his wife and struck him. They were to fight a duel tomorrow morning in Hyde Park. Forbes was to be Warburton's second.
Barry and Warburton to fight a duel?
Warburton was a formidable swordsman. He's already killed two men. Everybody knew that.
So, Barry took steps to ensure that Warburton would miss the assignation in Hyde Park tomorrow morning.
Exactly. Your mystery's solved. Ah, thank you.
And how will you prove it?
Oh, why, sir, it's not for me to prove it. I, of course, shall do my duties as a citizen. Oh, I'm to take coffee with Sarah Siddons in the green room at 11 o'clock.
Ooh.
Then I shall... Yes. Then I shall go to Bow Street and lodge information with the watch. They must take what action they please.
Oh, Barry's a blustering fellow, to be sure. But he would commit a cold-blooded murder. That's strains my credulity.
He's an Irishman, sir.
So?
Well, Irishmen are contentious folk.
But Barry, with other compatriots of his, was ever one to promise more than he performed.
He had a motive, sir. You'll not deny that.
That's true. Jealousy is a strong motive for murder. No one but a lunatic ever killed without a motive. But a murderer needs something else, Bozzy.
What's that?
Opportunity.
He had ample opportunity.
Oh, did he? Did he indeed? Study the play, Bozzy. Study the play. Then go and lodge your information at Bow Street.
Says your performance of Portia was exquisite, Mrs. Siddons.
You're a flatterer, sir. I failed miserably.
Oh, I'll not believe it, ma'am. And I wish Macbeth offered equal scope for your talents.
It's an ill-starred production, Mr. Boswell, and the company's an unhappy one. People are quarrelsome and spiteful.
Aren't they so in all theatrical companies?
Oh, there are a few such wherever you go. But here in London, at the Pinnacle, people are fighting for their existence. It's like a mountain summit. A few hardy souls have struggled to the top, where they jostle and shove. Each can only keep his place by pushing someone else over the edge. The art of survival comes before the art of the theatre.
Well, that's an uncomfortable thought. It has never occurred to me. You must find it disconcerting for, I perceive, you're a very sensitive person.
Oversensitive, Mr. Boswell. But I'm growing a lobster shell of indifference to protect me from all but the most disarming companions.
Of whom I hope you'll regard me as one. If I can be of service to you at any time, I do hope you'll call upon me.
Oh, you're very kind. I confess, I felt lonely since I came to London. Lonely and frightened.
Frightened?
There are undercurrents of feeling in the company. There are mishaps. Every time I step onto the cauldron trap, I fear another accident. And now, last night, it was horrible.
My dear, it's but natural you should feel like this. Count on me for assistance, I beg you. Tonight, Dr. Johnson, Mr. Garrick and I are engaged to dine at Streatham, but tomorrow and subsequently, I am free to devote myself entirely to your interests, should you require me.
Thank you, Mr. Boswell. I'm greatly obliged to you.
item, a snuff box. Item, a purse containing 6 guineas. Item, a handkerchief. Have you got that, Mr. Forbes?
The handkerchief? Yes, Mr. Blunt.
Item, a pocket knife. Item, 3 papers, 2 bills, and... Oh, here, what's this?
Now, let me see.
It's no good. I can't endure it. George lies dead, and here we are in his dressing room making an inventory of his possessions as if he'd never lived. I can't bear it anymore. You'll have to finish the job yourself.
I understand, Blunt, but this note...
Oh, destroy it.
I can't do that. It's part of his estate.
Burn it. It'll only cause trouble.
It's a serious matter.
Serious? You call this serious when George is dead?
I sympathize with your feelings, sir, but I think I ought to show this to Mr. Garrick.
What's it got to do with him?
Payne's a member of the company. I think Mr. Garrick ought to know.
Do you really think so?
Yes, I do, and I should take it to him straight away.
Oh, very well, if you insist, but I think it's a mistake. Much better to burn it and forget all about it.
Esther, I drink your health. May your eyes and your wit never lose their sparkle.
Thank you, James. Very nicely put. Mr. Thrale and I rejoice in your company tonight, all of you. Davy, fresh from his triumphs at the theatre, and Samuel and James, the most engaging companions in London. We believe our greatest good fortune is in our friends.
That is not a question of fortune, madam. Friendship doesn't happen by chance. It must be made. And being made has to be kept in constant repair.
Oh, come now, David.
Say what you will, the play has an ugly reputation. Accidents, injuries, even fatalities have happened over and over again.
Could it not be that mishaps attract our attention only when they occur in Macbeth? But when they happen in other plays, nobody notices.
I doubt it, ma'am. I very much doubt it.
To prove your hypothesis, I should want a list of all the mishaps in every play performed in London during the past 5 years. If Macbeth then showed a preponderance out of all proportion to the rest, I'd be inclined to agree with you.
Surely, David, if you believe in good or ill luck, you admit to being a fatalist. Would you deny the existence of free will?
Nay, Henry, I've no opinion about that. But actors are superstitious folk. They live on their nerves. For instance, I give a surpassing performance on one night.
Every night, David.
Henry, this is my point. One night, I excel. Mm-hmm. The next night, exactly the same performance. Mm-hmm. I fail completely. Now, why? I ask. Then I think back, and I remember. I whistled in the green room, or I broke a mirror. Oh. Somehow, I've offended the fates that rule the theatre.
Oh, this, sir, is sheer pagan superstition. Every effect has its cause. We must attribute these events to some human agency. To believe otherwise is to court disaster.
Well, how can that be?
Why, the moment Davy fears ill luck, he becomes vulnerable.
Samuel.
He walks on stage expecting some catastrophe, almost willing it to happen.
But you'll admit that accidents do occur.
Well, by all means.
And you'll not deny that Warburton's death was accidental.
As to that, sir, I'll not commit myself to an opinion.
But, Johnson, you said last night...
Sir, we have our suspicions. You, Davy, and I, we have our suspicions, but that does not mean that we know.
Well, we're not the only ones to suspect. The rumor goes around the coffee houses that it was murder. Warburton was very unpopular.
If we're to murder everyone that's unpopular, London would be another Golgotha.
A rumor won't do, Bosley. We need certainty.
Hmm. Well, I assume we can discount Rafferty for one. He was unconscious with drink.
He only appeared to be unconscious, Buzzy. If he'd been sober, you must agree that he had the opportunity.
Aye, Johnson, but not the motive. Not the motive. Don't forget, opportunity and motive. That's what you said.
Admirably reasoned, Buzzy. Very well. We agree to exculpate Rafferty.
As for Barry, he had motive enough, but no opportunity.
I took your advice, Jonathan. I studied the play.
And what did you find?
Why, that Barry was on the stage at the end of the previous scene and again at the start of the succeeding one. He couldn't possibly have crossed the stage in time to disguise himself and enter with the other murderers.
Yeah, so we assume that Rafferty and Spranger Barry are above suspicion.
All right.
You've been very silent, Davy. What do you think? Do you still say it was a mischance?
No, I don't. I believe it was murder. And I believe I know the guilty man's identity.
Indeed.
In heaven's name, man, who was it?
Forbes brought me a paper just before I left. He found it in Warburton's pocket. It was a promissory note for £36, signed by Jeremy Payne.
Payne?
Yes, it was Payne. He'd lost money to Warburton at cards. He couldn't pay. He was frightened at what George could do to him.
Well, there's your murderer, Johnson. And Jeremy doesn't come on stage until the banquet scene. Motive and opportunity. Don't you agree, Davy?
Aye, Buddy. I'm afraid I do agree.
Well, what will you do, Davy?
Do? Well, I must have a talk with Mr. Payne in the morning.
I assure you, Mr. Garrick, I had every intention of paying Warburton.
The road to hell, Mr. Payne, is notoriously paved with good intentions.
But you must believe me. I don't mind admitting to you, sir, that I was frightened of him.
He was a dangerous man to cross.
He threatened to send his bully boys to call on me.
Oh, did he? It looks to me, Mr. Payne, as if Warburton's death came at an opportune moment for you.
I'll not deny, sir. Why, what do you mean? Do you accuse me?
I make no accusations, Mr. Payne, yet. But you must admit that you stood to gain by his death.
Why, that's a monstrous implication. I'd never do such a thing. You must believe me.
Mr. Payne, I don't know what to believe. But you must understand that you'll be obliged to give a very exact account of your movements on Thursday night.
I'm fully prepared to do that,
I'm
sir.
Glad to hear it.
You'll note, sir, that Mr. Blunt is still alive.
I should hope so. What of it?
I gave him a note as well.
What? You owed him money, too?
Why, yes. Didn't he tell you?
How much?
The same amount. £36.
Oh, really, Mr. Payne? How did you come to lose such sums?
They both offered me double or quits on different turns of the last three cards
and
in the box.
And took the wager?
Well, yes, it was 2-1 in my favour.
Mr. Payne, your innocence appalls me. You have much to learn. Not only about acting, but about cards. I cannot believe that anyone would be so gullible. You fell among thieves, Mr. Payne. What is it?
It's the officer of the watch, sir. He'd like a word with you.
Mr. Garrick, you're not having me arrested.
Oh, gad's life, no, sir. That may come later, not now. Haven't I got enough to plague me this morning? All right, Forbes. Show him in.
Yes, sir.
And you, Mr. Payne, wait in the green room.
Yes, sir.
I want to know more about your game of faro.
We have a statement here, Mr. Garrick, made by one Seamus Rafferty, currently lodged in the roundhouse. Now, you're his employer, I believe.
That is correct.
Well, Rafferty's admitted to stealing certain sums of money, itemized below, from the box office of the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, between the dates 5th and 18th April of this year, 1776. Now, this admission has been written down at his dictation, signed by him, and witnessed by the magistrate at No. 6 Bow Street.
I understand.
Well, now, sir, were you aware that these thefts had taken place?
I really don't see that it's any affair of yours.
Pardon me, sir, but it is. You see, if you knew about these thefts and didn't report them to the magistrate, then you've compounded a felony.
I am not making any statement to you, officer, without consulting my attorney.
Well, Rafferty says you knew what he'd done, and you made up the loss out of your own pocket and told him to keep his mouth shut.
If the loss was made good, mind you, I'm not admitting anything, but if the loss was made good, then where's the felony? I'm not making any charges.
Ah, well. You see, sir, there's something else. Rafferty says that this Mr. Warburton got to know.
Who's there? Who is it? Who is it? Why, Meg.
sitting alone in the green room at this time in the morning? What is it, dear? What's the matter?
Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing, Sarah.
Oh, please, Meg. Please tell me. Are you sick?
No, it's nothing. Leave me alone, please.
Oh, come on, dear. Dry your eyes. Tell me what it is.
I can't.
You must. Tell me. Tell Sarah. Is it Thomas? Have you had another fall? Tell me. Tell Sarah.
I can't. I daren't.
Let me help.
There's nothing you can do.
How do you know?
Nobody can help.
Oh, trust me, Meg. Please trust me.
I can't. It's only put you in danger, too.
Danger? What danger?
Oh, please go away. Please leave me alone.
Well, you needn't worry about me. I can look after myself. Meg, you must tell me.
You won't understand.
How can I if you won't tell me what it is? Come on, dear. You must share the burden.
So to where to start?
You have just heard part two of Dr. Johnson Investigates, written by Richard Brayshaw, Leo McKern in the title role, Edward D'Souza as James Boswell. The executive producer of the Mystery Project is Bill Howell. The coordinating producer is Barry Morgan. Next week, at the same time on the Roundup, you can hear the third and final episode of Dr. Johnson Investigates.